morning, Colorado Springs. This is another Brighter Day in the Neighborhood. I'm your host, Angela Jones. And today we have an amazing guest to introduce you to. He is one of the reasons this program even exists, Florian DeCastro.
Hi, Angela. Thank you for having me.
Otherwise known as Flo. We commonly yes. know you as Flo. And so just describe for everyone what exactly is your connection to Brighter Day.
Sure. So, I'm an Asian veteran, immigrant,
right,
as well as an entrepreneur.
Right.
This was early or late December 2020. Had a cockamamie idea of, well, maybe I should start a media company. I managed to buy a radio station, right?
KPPF.
KPPF.
Okay.
So, you know, fast forward a little bit, we got you on board. It's like, oh, yeah, this is a great format to get everybody knowledgeable about who's who in the city.
Right.
And
right.
and that was basically the start of A Brighter Day.
Well, and if you could, like, share with everyone sort of this, just this drive or heart behind KPPF, period.
Sure. I've done my research. I used to be in the military for 21 years, and I understand that access to traditional media is very, very expensive. I mean, you've done some advertising, radio, TV, whatnot. It's expensive to get on media these days.
Right.
So the idea is that as part of the military, was very good to me. Did pretty well, successfully and financially. Maybe even given the opportunity to give back and drive that cost down so that more people can afford it across the board. Now, you know, I'm partial to Asian and minority, but still the idea is that that platform, that access, should not be limited to, you know, rich people.
Right, right. Absolutely. Yeah. And part of the focus is you're very, it's community based.
Yes.
Like it's meant to, the radio programs, as you know, not necessarily all the music, but the radio programs, the things that listeners will be able to enjoy on KPPF are community oriented.
True. And really, at this point, we've actually switched completely. You know, we're no longer doing music. You know, we did a hybrid format for a while, and that didn't really quite pan out. So we're now a conservative news talk and everything else associated with that, mixed in with providing access to local people.
Okay. Well, so when I didn't even realize that you know, that shift had taken
place. That's pretty recent. November, December timeframe is when we started moving into that. And then, of course, with the idea of getting more listenerships. And in turn, that listenership, I came here for this show, but now I'm going to stick around and listen to A Brighter Day because I love this format. I love who's the people. I love the host. I love who she's interviewing and interacting with. And who knows? Maybe I'm one of her guests in the future.
Right. Well, one of the things that I have actually really loved is the opportunity that we have had to get to know so many people who are involved in so many great projects and organizations in Colorado Springs. And I understand, besides this and a bunch of your other businesses, that you've recently gotten involved with, is it an Asian Heritage Center?
Yes. So there's a local foundation here called the Golden Lows Foundation. Mm-hmm. The founder is Cynthia Aki.
Okay.
She's been doing this for over 10 years. I came on board around March of last year, 2020, during, you know, we're still recovering from the pandemic.
Right.
And pretty much I'm not one of the main drivers, but I helped her a lot in to actually secure 8.4 acres in the Cheyenne Broadmoor area to now house the future Asian Heritage Center.
And so what is that comprised of?
So, immigrant from the Philippines. One of my major concern is that my son is first generation American, and you know, it's like, ooh, that's pretty special if you look at first generation American.
Right.
So you know, like a Plymouth Mayflower days and whatnot. But I'm concerned that as he gets older, as he has kids, grandkids and whatnot, they're gonna lose that part of who they are. That appreciation of, you know, hey, you're half Filipino. You know, your parents were born both from there. And while he's actually visited the Philippines multiple times, so he's there, my concern is that his kids and grandkids won't know who that is, short of, oh, you know, Grandpa Poppy, you know, mm-hmm. Flo did this and that, and from there.
Right.
So this is an opportunity to actually help showcase that. In addition to that, you know, we've had a good deal number of Asian hate, and I don't really want to go into that.
Sure.
But there is that portion, and a large part of that is ignorance, frankly.
Well, and I think, and you know, we can just look back in the last year or two, and that incidents, you know, regarding just racism toward people of Asian heritage absolutely have been in national news. And I think even historically in this area, there has been some issues with Asian racism.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that was historical, I think, you know, mostly surrounding the World War II historical events and what have you. You know, but it's not... It's not something that people are necessarily top of mind aware of. And so what I'm hearing you say is not only is it a place for people of Asian heritage to go and maintain their heritage, but also a way to connect people who are not of Asian heritage with Asian history, tradition, things of that nature.
True. I mean, most people don't realize, you know, the Transcontinental Railroad, built largely a good part with Chinese immigrants, went through Colorado. But is there any landmark or appreciation of that? No, not at all. The Japanese internment camps was actually here in Colorado. And that's a lot of families that were, you know, second, third generation Japanese, more American than Japanese, frankly, but they were moved from the coast because there were fears and concerns that they would be part of an uprising. And so that those families lost not just their lives, livelihood, businesses, and everything else. So just an appreciation of that, or a knowledge of that, that those kind of things exist, and good or bad. I mean, there's no, the truth is there. It's, I think it's more of a disservice if you don't actually talk about the truth, good or bad.
Right. Yeah. I was actually I was down in New Orleans not too long ago, and they have a World War II huge, it's like four or five buildings there, just outside the French Quarter area of New Orleans. And it's fantastic. I mean, and it really, you really get into, you know, the history, you know, all, you know, and I think it's pretty even-handed in terms of, just stating the facts and but it delved into part of the time that I ended up spending in that museum. It delved into, you know, how you know, African Americans were allowed to fight in the world wars, but they weren't allowed to, you know, participate otherwise fully in the United States because of Jim Crow laws, and how that, you know, even at that point in time, you know, people were like, hey, you know, this gave, in the wake of that, you know, we came into the 60s, and it touched on the Japanese internment camps, because, you know, the Japanese, you know, were trying to, you know, expand, and when they aggressed American soil, otherwise rational people, you know, got this idea that, hey, you may have contacts, you know, over in Japan, and, you know, passing them intelligence, so therefore we need to round you up so you can't do that. And to me, it isn't so dissimilar. I mean, obviously, you know, from my perspective, it became much more organized than what happened after 9/11. You know, it wasn't organized where we were rounding up people who were Muslim or, you know, Islamic, you know, tradition or religion, but there was that same suspicion against a people. And there isn't anything more racist than that. You know, hey, how you look makes you suspect.
Right. And you just your look.
You know, just your look.
Martin Luther King saying, you know, judge me by my content of my character,
not the color by color of my skin. I have a dream.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's really the case. I mean, you know, you talk about the African-American piece, you know, this key airman is one of the examples of that. The other piece, too, is that most people don't understand, like, there wasn't a lot of Asians fighting in the Pacific during World War II.
No.
And for obvious reasons, that's part of the concern, where it's like, but there's a lot of them that actually did have to go into other theaters, because that was one of the major concerns, is, oh, what if we have an all Japanese or all Asian unit? You know, will they betray us? You know, that kind of stuff. It's like, well, a lot of these people were 2, 3, 4 generations removed. It's like, yeah, I mean, I'm more American than Japanese or Asian.
On the flip side, you know, it wasn't, and I'm not saying it never happened, but at least, you know, what I was reading is that same thing didn't happen to Americans who had immigrated, you know, whose ancestors or families had immigrated from Germany.
Right, right. And actually,
Italy.
A good deal number of them were fighting in Europe.
Absolutely.
And so it's like, you know, why? What was the issue with that? But I mean, so that's one of the main things I'm doing right now for the Golden Rose Foundation and to help with more the understanding. So, so it's going to be an Asian Heritage Center. It'll have a Chinese tea house and all the different botanical gardens for the 6 major Asian communities in Colorado.
So how are they going to accomplish an Asian botanical garden with our climate? That's my question.
Well, I mean, think about it. If you look at it latitude-wise, we're roughly the same latitude as Japan.
Okay.
We actually have 2 sister cities, one in Japan and one in Taiwan, in China. We're roughly in the same latitude and climate and everything else. So a lot of that stuff.
Is it the same climate? I mean, I've been to Japan. I love Japan. Japan's one of, I would say, probably, I love going a lot of places, but Japan was one of those places. I've not been a lot of places in Asia, India. And I've been in Japan and part of Turkey. So, you know, gotten a little bit of flavor, but not really what we consider like the Far East. Or you know, East
Pacific,
Asia.
Pacific
I've been Pacific because I've been in Hawaii and Guam and Philippines, stuff like that. But not in what you would consider like, you know, beyond you know, Japan. Into Eastern Asia. So, but when I went there, you know, everywhere else I'd traveled up to that point, it was sort of like variations on the European theme is what it seemed like to me. You know, it was like, oh, I recognize this is Greek or this is Roman. You know, there was that sort of influence. But when you go to Japan, it's unique. It's just different. And the culture in and of itself, it's very, I would say homogenous, but it's more unified than you might find going into, say, an American city, or even, you know, like when I lived in Hawaii, there were a lot of Asian, different Asian cultures there, as well as other cultures there as well, mostly because of the military, we were on Oahu. But there was a lot of blending between the cultures, and it wasn't, didn't seem as distinct, even though, you know.
Well, and that's actually what most people don't understand is that within Asian cultures, it is very homogeneous. There's not a lot of diversity. Which is something we take for granted here because there is a lot of diversity in the U.S., you know, different religions, different cultures, different backgrounds, even different languages, even though English is the primary language. There's differences. You don't see that a lot in the rest of the world, and most people don't see that. I'm glad you picked that up because it is very distinct. You go to Japan, you don't get a lot of Korean or Chinese influence there is largely Japanese.
It's very Japanese.
So now trying to meld that into an Asian Heritage Center that has, you know, basically Chinese, Japanese, Indian, Filipino, Vietnamese, and Korean influences. Yeah. Those are the 6 major Asian organizations here in Colorado. How do you do that without offending? Because a lot of these cultures have been around for thousands of years and have come in contact, both good and bad, with each other. So there is still that level of, you know, he's not Korean. They're not Chinese, you know, even within the Asian community. So the idea with this is, or the guiding principle is like, we could be better knowing more about each other, about each, our neighbors. And well, part of the piece that we're going to have in the Asian Heritage Center is the food because, you know, I don't think you've met an Asian yet where, hey, let's go eat, you know, let's go have fun, let's go have karaoke. You never really appreciate it until you're actually within that actual culture. But a lot of the foods in the Asian culture here is just Americanized. So it's not like, you know, there's no such thing as General Shao's chicken in or orange chicken in China. It's just chicken. But
and it's every part of the chicken.
It's every part.
On a stick.
Yeah, exactly. Everything and anything. But people don't appreciate or realize that until like, oh, well, that's Chinese food. It's like, you know what they call Chinese food in China?
Food. Right.
But I mean, even that understanding. So that's the idea with the Asian Heritage Center, is to go beyond that.
Right.
And be able to know more about your neighbor and who they really are, because there's a lot of stereotypes.
Well, I still am intrigued about that garden. I mean, I know when I was Yokosuka is where I went and visited and stayed with a friend whose husband was stationed there. We spent some time in Tokyo. But, you know, we would see Mount Fuji and, you know, but it's an island. And I don't, you know, I recall it being, I mean, there were some, you know, skyscrapers is very well developed, you know, and we went to like Tokyo Disney and things like that. And so there was a lot of concrete or what have you. But I just recall it being much more lush. You know what I mean? And the type of things that grew. The other thing I really remembered, I remember and I loved, were the automated food.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
The vending machines.
The vending machines, but not just that, but also when you went up to the noodle stands and like you would pay and then you'd get like a ticket. So you would go in and get, you know, your ramen. And so they were ahead of the rest of us. In the, you know, in terms of food delivery before the COVID.
Well, I mean, that's a stereotype, right? Asian stereotype. Oh, they're a bunch of nerds.
No.
But yes, I mean, the technology is a really great piece there. And also, it's the yin and yang. I'll use that piece. Is that high tech, but nature, right? Mm. Because of the gardens and everything else. The peaceful relaxation.
Sure.
But then still the high tech, bustling,
I think it's great. I mean, to me, it was great. Like my friend had a, you know, a koi pond and a prayer garden, you know, and not, they weren't bonsai trees, but they were trees in her yard that were similar, like shaped, like one would shape a bonsai, you know? And so that was really neat. But I mean, when you and I first got to spend significant time together, it was actually at a cookout. And you had brought lumpia.
Yeah.
And I mean, so food, I think, is maybe that's the big common denominator. You know, I'm from the South.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll go, okay, so here's a good for example. You grew up in Nashville, and there is Nashville hot chicken. I don't know what kind of hot mess they're serving in all kind of restaurants around here that purports to be Nashville hot chicken, but it is not Nashville hot chicken. You know, so I get that. But I think it's, you know, if we can, if anyone can get some authentic lumpia, that will be worth the price of admission all by itself.
Well, ours, the one you've tasted, is as authentic as they come. It's actually a family recipe, a family secret. A lot of people think, oh, you know, egg roll, lumpia, they're all the same. No, they're not.
Not the same.
And each family actually have their prize dish or price recipe accordingly for that. And you can have, you know, one Filipino family, oh, that's chicken adobo, but another family would prepare it, it would be completely different.
Right.
So I mean, and I think that's the social part of us, you know, the breaking bread.
Yeah.
Everybody is happier and gets together more when they're, you know, sharing a meal type of thing.
Right. And I mean, to me, you know, as much as I'm not going to eat the Nashville hot chicken that's here since I've tried it, you know, for me, that imitation is the best form of flattery. And that's why I think we can kind of take away from there. It's like I was just down in Costa Rica and they had Chinese food, you know, and I think it was like, you know, I butcher Spanish. I'm trying to learn. But, you know, it was like basically food China, you know, it translates in English. But it was like the food comedia China, you know, de China or whatever. And it wasn't even like Chinese food like we have in the United States. It was this other version of it. But it was the point that people really want to that extent, partake in the culture.
Right, right.
You know, because getting into enjoying the food, you know, like Thai food or, you know, the Filipino food. And, you know, there's not a lot of Filipino restaurants, is really a shame from my perspective. But, you know, but just not having that access once you start to sit down, break bread, get familiar. I think it spurs some curiosity.
It does. And actually, on the Filipino side, I think that's almost by design, because we'd rather have you come over the house and spend several hours as opposed to, you know, in a restaurant, you only have an hour or two, really. And maybe even spend the wee hours all the way to dawn.
So we lived in a part of Oahu. Our neighborhood was predominantly, like, most of the people in the neighborhood were Filipino. And that was exactly our experience. I mean, it was big doings. Constantly, and multi-generational, multi-family gatherings. And we were always very embraced.
Yeah.
You know, come in, they feed you, and they feed you, and they feed you, and talking and laughing and games and more food. And it was wonderful. I mean, that's, you know. And then I got to know some people, just, you know, some of the things they do. Like, Filipinos don't point. They you know, direct with their lips.
Right.
You know, and so there's just, I don't know. I think it's a lot of neat stuff. I hope your Heritage Center kind of gets into some of those things as well.
Right. So the idea of the Heritage Center is actually going to be more high tech.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
So I'm largely in charge of the main planning of developing the entire complex.
Okay.
So, and I'm a big geek and nerd. I spent 21 years being with the Air Force.
Gotcha.
And more so with Space Force, with Space Command.
Gotcha.
So some of the technology we have is, imagine a floor wall to ceiling. The entire wall is a display.
Ooh.
And the idea of this is that you would download the app for the Heritage Center, and that you could be there every single day of the week, every single day, and the wall would change as you approach it.
Ooh,
so say you went there one day, and then you went there the next day, and in between that day, you did an ancestry.com.
Right.
So now that would potentially track, I'm 23% Asian in China, Mongolia, Kazakhstan, whatever.
Right.
As you go visit again, now that's potential information that will change and morph to, hey, you're 20% Mongolian, whatever.
Uh-huh.
Did you know about this about Mongolia? It's like, no. Did you know that, you know, the reason why everybody has that DNA is because of Genghis Khan, you know, Attila the Hun, and that piece of history where basically he spread, and, you know, everybody, he had kids in every single culture.
Right.
Did you know that's why you're showing up 20%?
Right.
No, I didn't know that.
Wow.
So that's the idea of doing that. The other piece is, I don't know if you ever, when you were younger, played with the paper dolls where you can change the
Absolutely.
Outfits and everything.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm recreating that virtually.
Oh, wow.
So it will, you know, you put in your dress size, you go into the dressing room, you put in your dress size, and then there'll be a light radar scan of your body, and then it will superimpose to you, and you can see what you would look like in a Japanese kimono, an Indian sari, a Chinese outfit, you know, for New Year.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually see that, and then if you so like it, depending on the colors and whatnot, you can press a button and it'll order and ship to your place.
Oh, really?
Those are the kind of things that I'm bringing in. And then you talked about you know the gardens, right? And
right,
their
right,
heavy
right.
water
right,
race.
Right, right.
And of course, we have a water issue here in Colorado.
Sure.
But there is a technology that will allow you to pull water out of thin air. And that's the kind of things where we're working towards on the center, where it's zero electricity and zero water use. And it can actually produce more electricity and water. Part of the technology there's a technology, you know, most people know renewable energy is solar panel, right? And wind and water and whatnot. Now we're looking at, as you step through the Heritage Center and to the walkways, you're actually generating electricity as you're stepping through.
Oh, wow.
So now we'll need a lot of power to power every single wall is a display.
Wow.
Every single wall, every single
table.
Are
you doing solar or just this?
No, it'll
kinetic?
Be a combination of solar and kinetic.
Right.
And then we would be able to produce our own fresh water for all the gardens and everything else without taking any more from from Colorado, you know, Colorado's dwindling resources.
No, and that's really kind of neat because I guess with that technology, it could have other adaptations too, you know, for other types of businesses or people who are trying to do things. Like I would love to plant some trees in my yard. Mm-hmm. I have a home up in Black Forest that was, you know, raised by the fires, Black Forest mm-hmm. fires, before we purchased it. But it's a water issue.
Mm.
You know, my neighbors who have planted, replanted trees, in general, have to truck water in. And I'm not against doing that. But, you know, there's just the aspect of, you know, it would be great to, you know, get out there and put more trees or put trees back mm-hmm. out on the land there. But there's that water issue.
Yeah. Well, I'll send you the technology. You can produce anywhere from a couple hundred to thousands of liters of water out of thin air.
That is fascinating.
And it's been around for close to a decade.
Is this one of your businesses that you've got?
No. Not that kind of water. No. But yeah. No. It's actually So I was a science and technology analyst for the Space Force, and that's how come I know some of this stuff, because they're actually used in the space program to actually produce water out of thin air.
Right.
So those are definitely things that...
Well, I'm just blown away. We barely got to scrape the surface with you. So, you know, and I know you're super busy and you've got so many things going on, but if you would do us the favor of joining us another day here... I'd love to have you.
Oh, anytime.
All right.
You know where I'm at. So.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Flo. And thank you all for joining us. You're with us here on another brighter day in the neighborhood. We're here at the same time and station each week. And until we get to spend time with you again, have a brighter day.